Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Great big giant Monday show for you. Thanks so much for being with us today. Second hour, we're going to talk about, is the Bible a Catholic book? With Dr. John Bergsma, a Bible scripture scholar from Steubenville University, a former Protestant minister himself. So hang around for that. It's going to be a great hour. This hour, we welcome our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, and this being the 50th anniversary of the year of Humanae Vitae, we have done a lot of talking about the Catholic teaching on sex and sexuality, both before marriage and after marriage or second marriages and all that. But what about what the Church teaches about living our sexuality within marriage? So we're calling this hour Sex After Marriage. Was that a bad title?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, are you just finding this out?
I'm just finding this out, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I'll get ready.
That can't possibly
You're
be.
You're a courageous man. Well, we discussed it, but I didn't know it was going to be today.
That's wonderful.
St. George will take care of us.
So, yeah, it's the Feast of St. George.
That's right.
And is St. George like the patron of Great Britain or something? Or?
He is the patron of England, yes.
Oh, of England.
England, precisely, because St. Andrew is a patron of Scotland and St. Patrick's a patron of Ireland. So he's a patron of England.
Is there a patron of Wales? I think Wales needs
Wales
a patron.
Wales and St. David also, yeah.
Oh.
St. David, yeah.
Wait, St. David? Who's St. David? I don't know who that is.
He's a Welsh David.
Oh, Welsh David. It's not the David and Goliath David.
No.
Did you ever see the TV show Davy and Goliath with the dog?
I do.
And the boy?
It was a Lutheran children's program. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Kid. 888-318-7884
is the number. I know. But actually, you know what? All that stuff, it's back because kids watch it on YouTube
or
wherever. Exactly. But yeah, the Lutherans did a great job on that show. 888-31-TRUTH if you'd like to talk with Father. Father, we often talk about chastity as Catholics, as Christians, and the virtue of chastity. It's certainly not a Christian or Catholic or even Abrahamic idea in particular. Chastity has been understood as a virtue across pretty much every culture.
Yeah, in some form or another, to be sure. Otherwise, keep a society together.
No, indeed. And so when we read the ancient pagans, for example, whether it is how they lived or not, I suppose that's a matter for them. I don't know. But it was certainly an exalted virtue to live chastely.
Yes. Yeah. Especially in the context of maintaining the sanctity of marriage and the family. Sure.
Right. So I think we can understand what it means to be a single person living chastely. A widow or widower living chastely, a vowed religious or a priest living chastely. What does it mean for married people to live chastely?
Well, with married people, it means precisely that their sexual relations are always ordered towards the procreation of new life, which means that they cannot do anything positively to obstruct procreation. That doesn't sound very romantic, mm-hmm. but it's essential because that's where the whole point of chastity comes in, because we have a necessary function in our human nature for the preservation of our kind. Mm-hmm. And to that, God has attached an intense pleasure, but the pleasure is only meant to be an aid or an assistance to an activity which is very, very crucial for the human race.
Yes.
Similar to eating. Eating preserves the life of the individual, mm-hmm. and procreation preserves the life of the kind. And so when you get those values inverted and pleasure is sought to the exclusion of procreation, well, then you have actually something which is contrary to the moral law, absolutely speaking.
Yep.
But then, as we all know, say we're using eating as an example, that we can go a little far, like we've been make pleasure the end or purpose here and now, but not like we're breaking the moral law, but just that our mind doesn't consider the full dignity and importance of the act, and that can cause certain disorders that are not grave, but certainly have to do with our spiritual progress. If that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I suppose that there's a way in which when I'm eating key lime pie, I'm not doing it to preserve my life.
Right. Very good. That is, the pleasure that we have in eating or in having marital relations is good in itself. It's not a problem in the sense that the action we perform to preserve our individual existence or procreation of the human race and the union of husband and wife in marriage, those are good things, and the pleasure that goes with them are to be enjoyed. But one needs to be always aware that there's a need to modify or to mortify so that we don't always follow through with our desire for pleasure, that we check it in some way or another in order to maintain clear in our minds and in our spirituality the real nature of this act and what it's actually for.
Yeah.
And so what I would say there is just that, like, you know, sure, key lime pie, fine. But the spiritual writers always say, you know, at a meal, always make sure that you don't leave the table without some little act of self-denial. And I think with married couples, it might be just a careful attentiveness to the other person,
right.
Which would be, you know, just a selfless attitude.
It's easy, I think, to see.
And I don't know what I'm talking about because I've got all these married people around me, and they should be talking about this. But anyway,
I'm going to guess more people have shared the intimate details of their marital life with you than with any of us. I'm thinking.
What can I say?
Yeah, that's kind of the job of a priest. It's easy for me. I suppose I'm going to be a little bit crass in this question, but it's easy, I think, to see the social value of chastity as a virtue. That is, the way that it simplifies the life of children and married life and social life. The whole thing becomes more easily fruitful and joyful if people are living chastity. But this is the crass part. But what do I get out of it individually? Why is chastity? Do you see what I'm saying? Or is that too crass of a question? Like, what do I get from chastity? I live a chaste life. What do I get for that?
Well, you get the fact that God made you in his image.
I like that.
Made his image, body and soul, but with a rational soul and a free will. And any sense in which we maintain and increase and perfect our ability to understand things well and to choose well is good for us. And that has to do also with picking our pleasures.
Yeah.
And it's not so much a question that we're not talking about prudery here. We're talking about, I think, more a type of culture we have now where there's so much anxiety focused on sexual pleasure, so much emphasis on all of that, because we have this pornographic culture that people, let's just say, they need to relax. And just like you don't expect every single meal to be Easter Sunday,
right.
So we should just be accommodating and kind and not too anxious about issues that have to do with, you know, how we feel or, you know, forget my drift.
I'm trying to speak kind of
delicately because
it's a family show.
Right, too, exactly.
Yeah, but there is a kind of there's a way in which we both have denigrated and exalted intercourse in a way. So, and we've got it backwards. The parts that should be exalted, we denigrate. The parts that – so sometimes I imagine it's just – I mean, I can't imagine what it is to be a young person in this hookup culture and all that today. But the amount of upset, anxiety, heartbreak, all of that must be – overwhelming. Just
and actually, we've gone beyond hookups because people just simply look at their devices.
That's right.
And don't even meet anybody.
Right.
I mean, so it's particularly dreadful because the type of human communication and the deep relationship, which is implied in the relationship between man and woman in sexual relations, that is their commitment to each other for life in order to bring forth new life and to take care of each other and their children. I mean, the extremely profound and beautiful context has just been completely, you know, just devastated beyond what one would have imagined not too very long ago.
I know, really not very long ago.
Yeah, it's very sad. And it's almost beyond the point where you would talk about it in terms of mortal and venial sin. It's like just a devastation of people's understanding and practice.
Right, you know? Right. And I do want to talk – I'm glad you mentioned that mortal and venial sin thing, because there's a way in which you talk about – and you recently wrote an article for Catholic Answers magazine about the invitation really of in Christian marriage – is an invitation to, I suppose, just to use my word, not your word, is an invitation to maturity. And that means to learn to manage the passions, or how, I don't, manage is not your word, but to moderate
balance,
the passions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a free for all. That's not the idea of marriage.
No. And it's not the idea of sexual relations either.
Yeah.
And this is one of the big difficulties we have, because we, among Orthodox Catholics, at least, there's such an emphasis on what's contrary to the natural law and would be a grave sin.
Yeah, that's right.
That kind of minimum becomes a sort of height of virtue.
Yeah.
And as my old spiritual director used to say when I was a kid, if you just aim to avoid mortal sin, you won't even avoid that.
Right.
That is like everything else. With anything else in life that's worth doing and that's good, there should be a certain finesse and attention and intelligent, reasonable consideration to what we do, and examining our conscience so that we don't let the affections of our hearts get attached to things that are really not worthy of our Christian identity. And this happens a lot, where there's like anything goes as long as you end up in the right place mentality. And that's about as graphic as I'm going to get. That mentality,
right,
really hurts the sensibilities of Christians, because they become attached to things that they shouldn't be attached to.
And that is really not what Pope John Paul was teaching in the theology of the body at
not
all.
As in
matter
the
fact,
least,
he,
no.
I remember him taking so much guff. I think, I don't know, sometime in the 80s, because he had said something about avoiding lust within marriage. And the world was shocked by it. I mean, just that
yeah,
was
they made fun of it. They even had cartoons they put out about it. Yeah.
Oh, did they have cartoons? Yeah, I just remember him getting made fun of.
Yeah.
And it's just basic, normal.
Yeah, don't objectivize your wife.
Yeah, that's unbelievable to the world that you would talk that way. We have to take a quick break. We'll talk more. We're talking about sex within marriage, what the Catholic Church teaches about that. If you have questions about what the Church teaches about our expressions of our sexuality within marriage, give us a call, 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. Back with your calls for Father Hugh Barber right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
If only evangelization was easy. But the truth of the matter is that most of the time, it's not. Talking about the Catholic faith is enough of a challenge even before dealing with the roadblocks that keep people from listening with an open mind. Apologist Carlo Broussard recognized that as he wrote Prepare the Way, a guide to step-by-step strategies that readers can use to break down those barriers to the very existence of God and religious truth, barriers to basic Christian beliefs, and barriers to the distinctive teachings and claims of the Catholic Church. Don't let obstacles get in your way. Learn how to overcome them. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, great big giant Monday show. Next hour, we'll talk about whether the Bible is a Catholic book. This hour, we are talking about relations within marriage. 888-318-7884 is the number. Our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, is our guest this hour, and we are taking a look at what the Church teaches about our relationships and sexual relations between men and women within the context of marriage. Your call is very, very welcome, 888-318-7884. Let's start with Peter in Delray Beach, Florida, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. He just disappeared from my – Peter, are you there? Peter is not there. Okay. Let's go to James in Pensacola, Florida. We'll stay in Florida at least, listening on 103.3 FM. James, you are on with Father Hugh Barber. Your question, please. James?
Yes.
Can you hear us?
I can hear.
Yeah, all right. James. Your question for Father.
My question is about sexual relationships in marriage after childbearing years are over.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the Church's view of that. What should it be? What should we achieve through that relationship?
Well, in and of itself, as long as it's a legitimate marriage, even when childbearing age is over, it's still morally licit to have sexual relations, just as it is at times of infertility. So that isn't—it's not a sin, but it is true. And this is not a popular notion nowadays. But let's just say, in Christian antiquity, at the time of the fathers, and in the Middle Ages especially, there was a sense in which, for ascetical reasons, for spiritual reasons, for spirit of penance or giving oneself over to prayer, the couple would sometimes not have relations after childbearing age. This comes out of St. Augustine's tradition, also the Eastern monastic tradition, and it's not a popular idea nowadays, but it's not entirely unworthy of being mentioned. People as great and as humane and intelligent as Jacques Maritain and his wife Raissa, they practiced a Josephite marriage. They forewent relations as a sacrifice, kind of like a celibacy within marriage. And so this does exist. I think it's not something that you can generally recommend because we have a culture where it's difficult to convey those things. But let's just say, and it's not the Church's view in the sense that married people are free to relate as to each other as married people, period,
yeah.
As long as it's within the law of God. But the idea that maybe some people might consider a particular form of a more intense practice of abstinence or self-denial is not at all outside of our tradition. And there's some beautiful examples in the lives of the saints. And so I just mentioned that as a possibility for some people. But it should be in the context of a relationship which is communicative and where both parties like the idea, and it's not emotionally fraught. There's not some other issue that needs to be discussed, but it's based upon an idea of just that religious ideal of the perfect practice of continence.
James, your thoughts?
That's wonderful. I think you've described exactly what I would hope the Church wants, and that's a great thing.
Thanks, James,
thank
very
God
much.
Bless.
Just to clarify something, because I really feel like this needs to be clarified. This is a couple's decision. This is not an individual's decision.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I pointed out that there needs to be full communication. And
right.
One or the other is not free to just say, that's it, forget it.
But
if there are no other issues.
There's a certain asceticism that comes with having children, because being a parent is a lot of self-denial.
I should say
right.
So.
Yeah. Like, you have to watch SpongeBob SquarePants sometimes. So and it gets worse than that. So there is a way in which, as we age, like, for example, my wife and I, one child left at home. We are both free to and maybe in need of some kind of ascetical practices in order to grow spiritually in our in our maturity.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And I think all we have to do is say, well, what was the most perfect married couple in the history of the human race?
I know it wasn't Adam and Eve.
Right. So who would be
Joseph
the next?
Joseph and Mary.
Right. And they never had relations and
right.
they were married.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that couples all have to abstain. Obviously not.
No.
But the point is that it's a deep, intimate relationship between man and wife. It doesn't automatically require
Yeah.
Sexual activity.
Like, and then just to throw this out, because I'm glad we're talking about this, because I do think we don't talk enough about ascetic practices as a method growing spiritually. But let's say a couple decided, well, for Lent, that might be a Lenten observance, that they would deepen their prayer life. And would that be appropriate or not appropriate?
I think it would be. St. Paul says that you can separate for a time to give yourselves to prayer.
Yeah.
But he said, but not for too long, so not to be a burden on each other. But the tradition of the church, and it's still in some Eastern churches observed, the expectation is that Lent is not a period when you have marital relations.
Uh-huh.
And that's why before, in the old canon law, you couldn't solemnize matrimony during Lent.
Oh, right.
Because you were not supposed to have the consummation during Lent. It was part of the Lenten fast.
Yep.
And that was included in the Eastern churches and still is in some places today, like pious Russians and whatnot, that you abstain from relations before communion, various things. Now, those are not obligations. No one should get anxious about it. But the fact is, these are parts of our tradition that people maybe don't know about or don't really like to talk about, but they indicate real spiritual values that can be helpful to the couple.
Yeah, well, frankly, I think sometimes we're afraid of being different from the world.
Mm-hmm.
And just saying, no, we don't think about sex and sexuality, including within marriage, the way the world does.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. We go now to Steve in Charleston, South Carolina, listening on 7:30 a.m. Steve, you are on with Father Hugh Barber. Your question, please, Steve.
Hey, Father Barber.
Hello, Steve. Hey.
I have just got a question now. This is all – I love these conversations where you have to get deep into it to figure it out. One person in the marriage is not capable of having sex or relations. Is the church is the other person for me is abstinent and they can't share any relations at all? I mean, I guess that would I kind of sitting here listening to you kind of answer my own question, really. I guess.
I'm wondering about what you mean by unable to have sex. That is, was this prior to the marriage, or this is something which happened subsequently? You know,
a medical
condition. Well, that if it's a physical impossibility, that's a physical impossibility. The requirement is simply that one is able to complete the act in a way which is natural in accordance with the natural law. But maybe that's something which just has to be looked into more carefully medically and otherwise. But if it's not – now, if they're morally unable to, that is, if they're emotionally or psychologically unable to, well, that's something that you really need to look into to try to overcome that obstacle. But, this sort of thing can happen. But the inability to complete the act means that one should not engage in it without being too graphic. I'm just saying that's true.
I don't think that was too graphic, Father.
No.
Steve, is that addressing your concern?
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was given the answer I thought I was going to get. It does. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thanks.
Again, we're talking about the Catholic Church's teaching on sex within marriage today with our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, because we wanted to have an exciting Monday. Rachel in Houston, is it too exciting for you, Father? Am I wearing you out? Sorry. Rachel in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio, 1430 AM. You are on with Father Hugh Barber. Your question, please.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for this topic. Hi.
Sure. God bless you.
My question is, God created sex, and really it's a very holy thing because through the sexual act, God creates another soul. You know, so he's present then. And if it is so holy and so wonderful, how come it can be so misused in a very, you know, almost an evil way?
Mm-hmm. Well, not almost,
you know,
actually.
What I mean?
Evil sometimes, yeah. Well, I do, and I think that there we have to consider the type of spiritual struggle that human beings are engaged in, because with the fall of our first parents, the first thing that the devil tried to do was to disturb the relationship between man and woman. And that's the effect of the original sin is this disorder in the relationship, and consequently, it becomes an occasion for that spiritual struggle, that is to maintain the right order between man and woman, and the mutual respect and love and honor, and not allow their sexual relation to become something which becomes abusive or base, as you point out. But it is part of a spiritual struggle. That is, it's only to be understood that since the devil so hates our human race and doesn't want the procreation of new citizens of heaven, that he would do everything he can to twist it around in every direction except that of bringing new life in the direction in which God intended it to be from the beginning. So it's not surprising, because it has to do with a spiritual battle. So he wants to debase and destroy what was originally meant to be for the happiness and beatitude of many, many souls.
Rachel, we'll have to leave it there because the music's playing, which means we have to take a break. If you have a question for Father Hugh Barber today, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. More about the Catholic Church's teaching of sexual relations within marriage. When we have to keep being careful, Father.
Postmarital sex.
When we come back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Can you trust the basis of the Christian faith? The Christian faith is under constant attack today in numerous ways, but the attack that does the most damage is the one that asks a deceptively simple question. What if your faith is based on a myth? The skeptics come with arguments to cast doubt in numerous ways, often attacking the reliability of the New Testament and the Gospels. And the sad news is that most people don't know how to answer these charges. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of them. Good, solid answers. That's why Catholic Answers Studios has just released Jimmy Akin's new DVD, The Dawn of Christian History. With his characteristic wit and passion as a master storyteller, Jimmy takes you through an exciting detective story that reveals how history supports the Christian faith. Order your copy of The Dawn of Christian History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Would you like to become a Catholic Answers Live parish partner? We need you to help us spread the word at your local parish. We'll give you bumper stickers, window clings, flyers, everything you need to let your parish know about the best Catholic radio show on the air. We want you to partner with us. Email us at calpartners@catholic.com today and become a Catholic Answers parish partner. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and I probably should have said this right at the beginning. If you live in the state of Georgia and you call today, you go right to the top of the line, because that's what we do when we get a new station in a new state, and we are so thrilled to be welcoming AM 1160, The Quest, in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank God. Look at that, Catholic.
Georgia on St. George's Day.
On St. George's Day.
Great.
How wonderful is that? Again, yeah, that's cool. I'm so happy Catholic Radio has come to Atlanta in particular. I mean, we've been in other parts of Georgia. And on St. George's Day.
Right, named after King of England, of course, was named after the patron of England. So there you go.
There you go. Welcome to all our new listeners who are now hearing us on AM 1160, The Quest, serving Atlanta, Georgia, the newest member of the great big giant EWTN radio family. As I said, if you call from Georgia, now I wonder if people will deceive us. I'm from Georgia. but whenever we have a new radio station in a new state, or in a, it's not a new state, but in a state, we just say everybody from that state goes to the front of the line. We're talking about what may strike many as a delicate question, but nonetheless, a very important question. Maybe that's why it's delicate, is because it's such an important question. We're talking about what the Catholic Church teaches about sexual relations within marriage. More and more people, I think, are being attracted to and convinced by Pope John Paul II's theology of the body, which is kind of an explanatory – you correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, but it's kind of an explanatory framework in which to help the church receive the teaching of Paul VI in Humanae Vitae, right, and to fully live it out with full fruitfulness in every sense of the word, spiritual and physical fruitfulness. But even within the theology of the body, as wonderful as it is, there can be – grave misunderstandings about
definitely
about what the church requires of us and permits and all that as far as sexual relations go. I'm going to – if you have little children, I'm going to ask Father a fairly graphic question now. So yeah, do – but this is very specific and quite graphic, Father. Everybody's leaning forward. What's he going to say? In the course of sexual relations between a man and a woman, a married couple – the completion of the act for the man must happen in the course of intercourse.
Right.
The same cannot be said of women. It does not have to be said about women. Am I correct about that?
Right, in the sense that the act of intercourse being completed with the man, if the woman herself has not attained
completion,
satisfaction, and
okay,
the man may assist her in that, and it doesn't require the normal intercourse, although that would be ideal, but you know, different people are different. People
have
different physiologies, so you know,
I
some
have
people
heard
can go on
we're
forever and other people might not be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a question of, you know, sensitivity, but it's not because that's it's really the same act. You have to look at things morally. It's not it's not a mechanism, it's not mechanical. It's natural, but you know, that the woman's satisfaction, if she's asking for it, is definitely part of the act. So that should be able to be fostered.
But there's a biological function to the male completion of the act that is procreative.
It must be procreative. So that's the at least in principle. So that's the rationale. And I could just say, regarding all these theology of the body folks, if they would read St. Alphonsus also. And pay attention to everything he says.
Tell me what do you remember the name of the work?
Well,
you
want moral theology, but it's coming out in English now. There's someone publishing it now, and of course he goes into great detail. He's an old-fashioned moral theologian, but if you look carefully at what he says, he's very humane and comprehensive, but he's also rather strict. And he basically emphasizes that people are not to develop in themselves a preference for acts which cannot be naturally completed. That is, I don't mean to be too graphic, but if you get to the point because of your past behavior as a college student or something, and so you begin to prefer certain acts which cannot be morally completed as a Catholic,
you got to break that attachment.
You shouldn't develop that attachment, and that's the problem. Is that some of these authors, they go too far and they go, well, it's okay as long as but the point is that St. Alphonsus says that you shouldn't have the attachment's not good for you morally. Like I could get away with doing this, I would, but since I can't, I do this acrobatics.
Yeah.
And that's just wrong. And so, and he doesn't necessarily give a complete moral quality to it, but we need to be serious about this, that we're not talking about the end of the world if people don't get exactly what they want. You know what I mean?
Exactly right. We're all going to survive it. And the thing is,
and God is merciful, and priests are not too strict, as we know. And we've been through this many, many times. But the Christian truth about just the natural asceticism and austerity of marital relations should be something we should pay attention to.
Right. And that's all. I mean, you use the analogy, and it is only an analogy of food before, but that's the same thing is true of food. Like I can develop attachments to sugar cereal that keep me from eating healthy things.
Right. And, yeah, exactly. It's on that level, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, although with procreation, it's a more serious matter than, you know,
yes, I right.
But still, that's where we're moving with that, is just to have a certain finesse and appreciation that allows us to mortify ourselves know?
Right. Exactly what the world says you should not do. As a matter of fact, I think there's quite a few schools of psychology that form around the idea of never, ever deny yourself in sexual matters. And that's just so destructive. It's a 20th century innovation that's
would have to
deadly.
Be. Yeah.
Let's go to Perry in North Dakota, listening on 104.1. Perry, you are on with Father Hugh Barber. Your question.
Hi. Well, thank you guys for having me.
Happy to have you, Perry.
Great.
Oh, I'm doing good. I think you guys just answered my question for me, actually. But I guess it kind of was along the lines, and again, it's slightly graphic, all children must leave the room. So I was kind of thinking more in, like, the exploiting of it. I heard you talking to a woman, so after procreation, you are still allowed said relationships with
right.
your wife
yeah.
and
yes.
acts. But what if someone were to go to the point of, I don't know, even very mildly, a sense of masochism. They like to have a...
Wait, you don't have to go any further. You don't have to go any farther. We get that. And this gets to a spiritual question, I believe.
Yeah, I think that there, in such things, one has to consider then not just the sexual aspect, but the underlying respect of the persons, their relationship to each other, and the meaning of the human body as a source of life and of delight to each other, and the way in which we might distort that, we have to be very, very careful that we're not falsifying distorting the nature of the relationship. So I'm just trying to be as delicate as possible, but the fact is you have to consider the question of mutual respect, and that just because somebody wants to do something doesn't mean that they ought to. And just because someone else is willing to have you do something to them that is a little bit weird or embarrassing or out there doesn't mean you should do it. Because you always think of the dignity, like that this is a sacred action that involves a communication between the two human beings with their bodies and everything, and not just some kind of thing where they're pushing the limits of their imagination. Get my drift.
I do. We do indeed. Perry, okay. Thank you very much for that question. I hope that was helpful. Let's go to Anonymous in Fort Collins, Colorado. You know what? I'll get to my point in a second. Anonymous, your question for Father.
Yes. So I'd like to know if there are resources out there for, you know, men struggling with, you know, abstinence, you know, during, like, say, practice of NFP or, you know, post-birth, you know, for them to help them with self-control and things of that nature during periods where abstinence is required.
Sure.
Well, I mean, first of all, there's persevering prayer and you know, the avoidance of the occasions where it's difficult. I think that I don't know of any resources that are written precisely for men in that particular situation, but the great thing which has been missing in our culture for a long time has been precisely that all of Christian formation for chastity assumes chastity as a norm. That is, you're chaste until you marry, and then marriage requires certain periods of prolonged separation or abstinence.
Right.
So that the ability to abstain should be kind of a Christian acquisition that's
everyone
that's
should have.
That's taken more for granted. And I think one of the difficulties we have nowadays is that that's not understood or appreciated sufficiently. And I mean, it's not the vocation to celibacy, for example, is that's as a state of life. That's one thing. But everyone has the necessary obligation of maintaining the moral law and of abstaining for certain periods. And so it's something to just work with moral struggle and seeking to make progress morally, especially by using the means of prayer and the use of the sacraments. But one just simply has to keep struggling and do the best one can, because
right.
that is granted true after marriage. There could be then the familiarity with the use of marital relations, and so it's difficult to abstain. But I think that that's not anywhere outside of the normal capacities of a Christian man to do that if he has to.
I would suggest Matt Frad. You might visit mattfrad.com and learn more about Matt Frad.
Okay.
He writes about these issues, and he has – he kind of – more or less can point you in the direction of all kinds of resources, on the internet. And Matt's a very solid guy. So I'll point you to Matt Frad on that one. We have to take a quick break. So I will say thank you so much for that call, Anonymous. We'll be back right after this with Father Hugh Barber.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our fifth annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there.
We've had a wonderful time going home all enthused.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
Normally, you'd have to root through a dozen different books to get half the stuff I've learned here.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Join us this September 27th to the 30th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. All of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke.
I enjoy the atmosphere and the friendliness of the people. I'm having a great time.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
I've just learned so much. You know, I've been a Catholic all my life. It's just been so wonderful.
I love it. I want to come back every year.
Did you know that Catholic Answers Live is on TV? What began as a monthly series on EWTN in April of 2017 is now going to be coming to you on a weekly basis. You can catch Catholic Answers Live TV Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, with an encore at 2:30 a.m. on Sundays. We'll also be available soon on Apple TV, Roku, and the Augustine Institute's multimedia platform, Form. Make a point of making Catholic Answers Live TV part of your weekly viewing, and we'll see you on the airwaves.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you with us. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. Father Hugh Barber is our guest. And Father, I'm supposed to I forgot to do this, and I was supposed to ask you about the upcoming conference. Are you a speaker at the upcoming Catholic Answers Conference?
I'm not one of the speakers.
No, but you're a homilist.
Yes,
right?
You'll be the homilist. Yes, yes. I tend to do that every day.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Right. We call them humilies, and we love them. Do they still post them? Are we still posting some of these homilies? Or
I suppose I never watch myself, so I don't
know. That's your policy. I know. Because you don't want to be Narcissus, is that why?
I don't think there's much danger of that.
Really?
No, it's more right. Medusa would be more.
That is not true. I think thou exaggeratest.
I'll just describe my feelings about listening to myself.
Let's go to Melissa in Idaho. I don't have a radio station for Melissa, but we know that Catholic radio is all across Idaho. Melissa, your question for Father.
Hi, Father, my question is what the Church teaches on in marriage, what the act is, like if the if sex is okay during pregnancy, mm-hmm. and like granted if the woman is able to, like if there aren't any effects that she goes through, obviously. But what the Church teaches on that?
Well, one has to respond to this very sensitively, in the sense that obviously the marital relations, when there's the pressure or the need, are preferable to putting someone in occasion of sin or making life difficult for them. So yes, you can have relations during pregnancy. It's not forbidden at all. And in fact, a lot of people nowadays, they're probably laughing and going, I can't believe they're even asking this question. But it shows your sensitivity, because it's a very important one. Because the fact is that in the earlier tradition, if you look at St. Augustine or others, he would have just said, how is it possible that people have relations when they're pregnant? He would just say, why would they do that? So he has a very high, austere kind of monk's view of things.
I could have explained it to him if he had asked me.
Right. But I mean, it depends on what stage of pregnancy also. Yeah. But I would say the thing there is to consider that our first parents, had they never fallen, St. Thomas Aquinas says they would have had relations less frequently because they would have been aware of when they could procreate.
Oh.
But they would have been more pleasurable because not involving the eclipse of reason. That is, if you could imagine that they could converse while this is going on, it's a different kind of world than the one we live in. But since marriage now involves – married relationship involves a passion difficult to master, one doesn't insist. But I think the man needs to be sensitive to his wife, obviously the wife sensitive to the man, and they need to work it out between the two of them. But certainly there was a time in the church's history when moral teachers of great authority tended to think that, well, pregnancy is not the best time for this. Which is kind of evident, but it's not like you're taxing someone with sin.
No,
when you say this, you're just saying, you know, it's a question of just being mortified or abstinent. So,
does that get to what you wanted to know, Melissa?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
So the answer is basically yes, but you know,
yes, but the answer is always yes, but Augustine.
Yeah, that's true. And he gets the rap for it because he is completely...
Does. Yeah, but the church says yes, but Augustine said...
No, I mean, Augustine in front of an audience of men in North Africa says, I can't believe there's somebody who have a relationship with your wife even when they're pregnant. And of course, nowadays, if you said that, they would probably...
They'd be like, what?
They'd remove you from your position.
From your office, right.
And send you somewhere. Anyway, because it's just so far from our own lack of an ascetical view of sexuality. That's the problem. It's just,
yeah.
It should be a little more natural to think of that aspect of it, even though we don't need to be obsessive about it.
I'm glad Melissa asks that question, though. I just think there's so many basic questions people don't know what the church teaches, and so church doesn't
talk
about it.
It's really, you almost want to say the tradition, the comprehensive Christian tradition, because what you say the church teaches nowadays, it's like, well, now we're just barely trying to keep our head above water, observing the minimum of the natural law.
Right.
And I'm talking about the whole spiritual tradition that involves all the holy married couples and ascetics, and from Mary and Joseph all the way to the present,
right,
with the freedom and the variety and the discernment that Christian life gives people.
Yes.
Instead of being so anxious about this question. And that's
I see what you're saying.
That's why a lot of clergy, I imagine some clergy listening to this would be really annoyed with me just that I'm talking about this stuff. But I mean, the fact is... this is part of our tradition, and it shouldn't be denied.
The way you say it, it's almost like an invitation. Be part of this great tradition.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it. I like that. Let's go to Adam in New Orleans, Louisiana, listening on 690 AM. Adam, your question for Father.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Father, I needed to clarify something you said earlier, then ask a quick question. Did I hear you say that couples... beyond childbearing age, if they had sex, it was considered illicit but not sinful?
No, it's not illicit and it's not sinful because they're married and they can. There's the object of their union with each other, and they're not deliberately posing the obstacle. It's just a question of age, so they certainly may. Although it's quite possible, as I mentioned, that in the Christian tradition, that was commonly a time when people considered. Beginning to live a more austere celibate life together or separately. And that's something that's existed. But there isn't any obligation in that regard, not at all.
Okay. Adam?
And what about childbearing age? If the woman has had a hysterectomy...
No, she can still have relations. Yeah, it's fine.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's equivalent of you know, being post-childbearing age.
Right. Thank you, Adam. Thank you very, very much. Let's go to, we have an anonymous caller from an anonymous location. Anonymous, you are on with Father Hugh Barber. Your question, please.
Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hi, Anonymous. Your question?
Am I to understand with married couples that pleasure should only be, pleasure is only for childbearing and not outside of the purposes of childbearing?
Let me make a distinction. If the pleasure is the purpose of the act to the point where you're performing acts that are of their nature unable to cause procreation, then that would be the really serious case where no, it should not just be pleasurable, it should be procreative. But certainly in the minds of the couple, they don't have to have procreation foremost in their mind at the moment they're having the, just like when you're eating, you're sometimes just enjoying what you're having, but you keep a normal moral balance in your life, realizing that you shouldn't eat too much and you should eat healthily and all of that. So I think it's the pleasure accompanies the act, but if you have a sound Christian moral sense, it's always procreative, or at least not an obstacle to procreation, but that doesn't mean that that has to be, you know, sort of Spock-like, you know, foremost in your mind.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that would be rather silly, frankly, if you know what I mean.
It almost sounds like being kind of prudish about it. Like,
right. And
that's not what we're getting at.
It's like, you know, what if your mom, you know, made dinner and made an issue of, you know, making sure you only ate, you know, that things were only seasoned to a certain degree and you didn't, you know, I mean, she was like punishing you, saying, well, we'll just, you know, it's the same thing with sex. It's not supposed to be some kind of, you know, exercise in a restraint that's so great that there's actually not much pleasure.
Anonymous, does that address what you were asking?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Father.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Father, one thing you have not said that I want to ask you about, and I wonder if this is intentional or we just haven't gotten around to it. Usually the easy modern kind of church formula is that sexual relationships within marriage or sexual relations within marriage are to be unitive and procreative.
Right.
And that we haven't talked about the unitive part.
Well, I implied it many times.
Yeah, no, I just wanted
conversation,
to.
But the fact is that no matter what anybody says, and I'll say that again, no matter what anybody says, when you have two things that are distinct, you can make a distinction between them. And the procreative end of marital relations has a priority over the unitive end, although the two things are never to be separated. But the unitive end is already in the context of marriage and the cohabitation and the fides, the union of the couple is already there. But the activity they engage in sexual relations has a specific procreative sense. And so you don't separate the two. Although, like, for example, when someone's beyond childbearing age or is already pregnant, whatever, the unitive purpose is there and it's perfectly fine, but it always has to be without prejudice to the natural nature of the act.
Yeah.
But we're not prudes, but we do point out that if you don't evaluate, if you pretend that the unitive and procreative end are both equal, you will end up with people saying, I can use contraception, do this.
Got you.
And
Let me just go real quick, see if I'm going to go to Anonymous. No, I'm not. That phone call went. I was going to try to go real quick. Let's go to Tom in Sandusky, Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio, 88.1 FM. Tom, you got to be real quick with your question.
Well, we do marriage prep, and most of the couples who are taking marriage prep are all already contracepting and plan on contracepting in their marriage. Aren't they giving an automatic, almost, reason for annulment because they haven't promised to be fruitful at, you know, each act to be open to life?
Well, as far as what's required for the validity of a marriage, it doesn't mean that they have to intend that each and every act be open to procreation. It means that they can't exclude children from their union. That is, that they're not allowed positively to exclude children. Of course, what you're describing is wrong. It's immoral. It's very sad. But automatically, the practice of contraception doesn't automatically
nullify,
give ground for annulment. No, because as long as they're saying, well, we're going to have kids eventually, but we're going to do this in the meantime, it's sinful. It's wrong. And they should be instructed and well about the importance of natural family planning. But it still wouldn't make the marriage null unless it became clear that that was just a way of avoiding procreation altogether, which could, you know, develop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom, what do you make of that?
I guess so. It seems like it's almost a cop-out to me, though, because they are saying that we are going to control of it and not opening it to God.
I suppose one way to say it is not every sin is an impediment to marriage.
Right. I mean, the fact that they're going to misuse their marriage powers or already are before they're married doesn't change the fact that for a validity of a marriage, there has to be the openness to life. That's why the priest, you know, they have the survey before and they also make it clear in the ceremony to receive children willingly. And, of course, if they're contracepting, they're not doing that at the moment. and they're also receiving their sacrament of marriage in a moral state, which is very questionable. But it still wouldn't automatically be grounds for annulment.
Tom, thank you very, very much for that question. Thank you, everyone whose call we were able to get today. Thank you so much for that. Father, I'm sorry for springing it on you. I thought we...
Spring is the season for this sort of thing.
I misunderstood the conversation we had, but man...
It's time of the birds and the bees.
It is, that's right. Springtime, right? And I will highly recommend to the listener, read Father Hugh Barber's article in the current issue of Catholic Answers Magazine, because it talks about... it puts the marital relations and all everything about marriage in the context of the ongoing spiritual struggle to be like Christ.
Right, exactly. I recommend the article too.
Yeah, oh, good. Father, may we have your blessing.
Benedictio Dei Omnipotentis, Patris et Filius Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et mani et semper. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Father. Coming up next, Dr. John Bergsma from Steubenville, from Franciscan University in Steubenville, will be here to talk about the Bible, and we'll ask the question, is it a Catholic book? That's coming up next on Catholic Answers Live.